Welcome to PostView.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Rural Communities Initiative Technology Webinar. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. If at any time during the conference you need to reach an operator, please press star 0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Wednesday, February 18th, 2009. I would now like to turn the conference over to Jennifer McHenry. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Hi, thanks. Welcome, everyone. Before we get into the presentations today, I just wanted to take a quick second and let everyone know how they can ask some questions and answers. So as you heard, at the end of our presentations today, you'll be able to ask a question live over the phone to any one of our presenters or all of our presenters as you see fit. But there's also another way to ask. If perhaps mid-presentation you think of a question and you don't want to wait till the end, or you misplaced all your pens and you don't know where to write it down till the end, there's a quick and easy way to do it. First, you can look at the top of your screen, and you should have a Q&A button. And when you click on that button, it'll bring up a dialog box on your screen, and you can just type your question in there and hit ask, and that'll get sent to us. And we will collect all of those questions that come in and make sure that during our question and answer time, those get addressed by our speakers. And when you send those in, you'll receive a quick message back that says something to the effect of, thank you for your question. It's been submitted to the moderator. This serves one of two purposes. The first is to let you know that we got your question, and the second is that it actually frees you up to ask another question if you want to. So that's just one way you can ask a question, or again, you can save them till the end, write them down, and then ask during the question and answer session. And as the operator said, this can be done by hitting the 1 and then the 4 button on your phone. And then now we'll start the call. And I'll turn over to James Butler with the Office of Family Assistance. Thanks.
Thank you, Jen, and good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to all. We'll be having another one of our Rural Communities Initiative webinars today, and this will cover rural technology on mobile technology and distance learning. As you all know, the Office of Family Assistance began a Rural Communities Technical Assistance Initiative back in early 2008, and we did that by asking some of our regional TANF program managers to submit nominations of agencies serving TANF participants in rural areas who could benefit from some resources, trainings, and other supports they need to overcome some of the barriers and daily challenges they face in providing services to their TANF customers. That work led to the Rural Communities Academy that occurred in September 2008 in Kansas, where many of the participating rural sites expressed technology as one of the many challenges and expressed an interest in learning more about how to utilize technology in their TANF programs and in their communities. So we are pleased to bring to you today this webinar as one of a series of webinars where we hope to be able to address and provide you with some additional resources to manage some of your challenges. We have some very knowledgeable speakers for you today who will share their knowledge and resources around implementing mobile technology and distance learning programs. We will later open the lines up, as Jen mentioned earlier, for all of you to ask questions or if you have comments for the speakers. So without further ado, our first speaker for today will be Ms. Mary Campagnola, who is from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, USDA, Rural Development Telecommunications Program. Mary will share with you some potential upcoming funding opportunities pertaining to rural technology. Mary is the outreach coordinator for the telecommunications program, reporting to the assistant administrator, Rural Utilities Program. She's responsible for outreach strategies and coordination for all telecom programs. She has produced 24 rural development broadband workshops, as well as many other outreach events. Her responsibilities also include strategic planning and performance management for the telecom program, as well as financial reporting. She has been with the telecom program for 5 years. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Mary Campanola.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to see if I can get this slide to advance here. On the first slide, you have my contact information. Please do not hesitate to contact me, and I'll tell you a little bit more about the other resources we have available to you. But go ahead and contact me if you have any questions that we don't cover today or subsequent thoughts come to you or anything like that. Let me just tell you what rural development is in the Department of Agriculture. We are responsible for the economic development of rural communities, and I am part of an organization called Utilities Programs. We have other programs that focus on business loans and grants and housing loans and grants. Our group focuses in on the following three areas: water and environmental programs, which makes loans and grants for water systems in rural communities; the electric program, which makes loans to rural electric cooperatives and other electric companies; and then the telecommunications program, which will be our focus today. We make loans and grants to communities for the construction of telecom infrastructure and distance learning and telemedicine services for rural communities. Under the telecommunications program, we have three main areas. We have loans, what we call our infrastructure loan program, which makes loans to local telephone companies. It's been around since 1949. We have our broadband program and Community Connect grant program, which are loans and grants for local telephone companies and other companies who offer broadband services in rural communities. And we have our distance learning telemedicine loan and grant program for providing DLT services to rural residents. So today I'm not going to talk about the so much about the infrastructure program, but focusing on broadband and distance learning telemedicine. This slide just shows you some examples of how rural communities are using broadband to improve their communities and the job creation and the social life in communities. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. I'm sure you're all well aware of the benefits of bringing broadband to rural America. The reason my organization exists is that in the past it's been difficult to get financing to rural communities because in many cases they're higher cost to serve, and so it's been difficult to bring broadband to rural communities. Going to talk now about the Distance Learning Telemedicine Grant Program, and I've given you a slide here that has our website on it. If you want to go out there, there's an application guide and some other information. There's some success stories of grantees who have taken advantage of our program and who have brought distance learning and telemedicine services to rural communities. There's actual contact names out there, summaries of all the grant awards that we've made, so you can go out and see the types of projects that we've funded. We do currently have a grant window open right now for our grant program, and the deadline for applying is March 24, 2009. As you can see, there's an application guide, and there's a toolkit that you use to actually produce the application if you're interested. A little bit more on who's eligible for the grant program. Just about any organization that is capable of providing distance learning or telemedicine services is eligible. The only ones who are not eligible are individuals or sole proprietorships. Tribes are eligible. Both for-profit and non-profit organizations are eligible. Most of our grantees come from on the telemedicine side are private hospitals, but there's and non-profits as well. And then the school systems and colleges and universities on the distance learning side. The projects are defined as projects that will use telecommunications to actually produce the services. So distance learning means that the educational services have to be delivered over a telecommunications line of some type. Telemedicine, the same thing. We're not funding a project where you would, you know, have two doctors sitting on the same floor that are just sharing information. It has to be across the telecommunications link going out into rural communities. And I'll give you some examples of these projects. A little bit on how we score this. This is a competitive grant program, and the scores are based on the level of population and how dense the population is, how many of the residents in the community are eligible for the National School Lunch Program, how much matching funds the grantee can come up with, whether it's in a USDA-designated economic zone. And then there's some subjective scores, the need for the project and innovativeness and so on. So all of these categories are evaluated, and a list is made up of the scores, and then we fund the awards to the point where we have used up all the funding for that year. We get about twice as many applications as we can fund each year, and we have not gotten our appropriations yet for this year, but we're envisioning that we will get the same as we got last year for this grant program, which is about $25 million. Again, the application deadline for this program is March 24th, and let me just stop here for a minute and let you know that if you are interested in applying, we also have, in every state, we have a rural development state office that is available to help you with looking at economic development opportunities for all of our programs, and that information is available on the website. We also have field representatives in each state that work specifically on the telecommunications program, and they can answer your questions about the DLT grant program or anything else that I'm talking about today. And if you go to our website and click on Contact Staff, it will give you the name of the general field representative in your area, or you can email me and I can help you with that. Now, some examples of what we mean by distance learning. We have been doing this since 1993, so we have quite a lot of success stories in doing this. This has been an invaluable tool for rural communities to offer services to their residents that are just not available because they're not, they don't have the specialists, either educational or medical specialists, that they need to provide the services. So some examples: connecting schools so that they can share teaching resources, especially things like foreign languages, advanced placement classes, advanced math classes. And then we have also some schools are taking advantage of the capability to offer job training, GED courses, adult education, colleges and universities offering courses to local high schools and among colleges. And continuing education job training, as I said, is a very important tool for rural communities. Some telemedicine projects, examples, remote diagnostics, such as the truck shown here for Eastern Kentucky Mobile Health Service, allows the medical providers to go around and provide services in rural communities, even the smallest communities. Remote radiology is very popular. Visiting nurse associations is very, very popular, and we've done a lot of those projects. And so the goal here is to provide resources from an urban or suburban area out to a rural area. So as I say, if you go out to our website, there are summaries out there of these types of projects, and you can see the kind of thing that we've done and you know, maybe give you some ideas of how your community might participate. And then the final program that I'm going to talk about today in a little bit of detail is the Community Connect Grant Program. This program started in 2003, and it is a competitive grant program, as is the DLT grant program, meaning that there's scoring that we go through on the grant applications, and then we rank the applications that we receive, and then we fund them up to the extent that we can. This grant program is for communities that want to bring broadband to their residents, and it's for one community only with a population of 20,000 or less. And there is a matching contribution that is required. There is a notice of funding availability that will be published soon for this year. We haven't published that yet for this year, and it usually gives you about 60 to 90 days to get your application in for this program. And last year we had $15 million available for this program. Again, we get about twice to three times as many applications as we can fund. This program was designed for the neediest communities to bring broadband to the communities. Now, I should point out the difference between this program and the DLT program. The DLT grant program funds the equipment that you need to provide telemedicine and distance learning services, such as video conferencing equipment, computers, software programming, and so on. Whereas the broadband grant program actually funds the broadband services themselves. So what is required for the grantee to do is to develop a or create a community center, which can be just a room in the library. It doesn't have to be a separate building or anything, but there has to be a public community center with 10 computers available free of charge to the residents of the town. Also, free service must be provided to the critical facilities for 2 years, and that includes the fire station, city hall, and so on. And then the grantee must show how they're going to grow out from the inner part of town out to offer basic broadband service to residential and business customers within that proposed service area. Very popular program. The community center has proven invaluable in terms of making rural residents aware of the advantages of broadband. Who is eligible? Just about anybody except a partnership or an individual. The scoring involves, again, the rurality of the community, the economic need of the community. In this case, it's measured by the median household income of the community compared to the state average. And the benefits derived from the proposed project. These grants are do not require a professional grant writer to fill out this application. We're really looking for what does your community need and how are you going to how is this funding going to benefit that community. Some success stories. Again, this program was designed for the neediest, most rural communities out there that would not get broadband any other way. So I've given you a couple examples of how important this program has been to some of these remote communities. We have a wonderful example from the Huerfano, New Mexico, Navajo Reservation. They got a Community Connect grant from us and created a computer center, and then they went to our sister agency in rural development and got funding to create an electronic commerce center, and now they are selling their Navajo arts and crafts on eBay, all through these two grants that they got through working with the New Mexico Rural Development State Office and our field representative. And then I've given you a couple of other examples of how the grantee has involved the local community in performing customer service, using high school students to do customer service for the project, and this kind of thing is very popular and has been very successful. And I've given you some information there on if you're interested in applying, how you can find out more, and also the link there for the general field representatives so that you can get information if you need to. Now, let me just say for 1 minute a little bit about the stimulus bill. I'm sure you've all heard about the stimulus bill that was signed into law yesterday. And we have gotten some additional funding for that from that stimulus program and stimulus bill. So we will be announcing, as soon as we have our plans finalized, we will be announcing the requirements for that program. That's going to be an additional $2.5 billion between now and 2010 for us to award grants and loans for broadband and distance learning and telemedicine. So the program that we will develop for that funding doesn't necessarily have to have the same requirements as the programs I just went over with you. So more to come on that front. We aren't sure yet how quickly we can get that done, but the whole point of the program is to get something done quickly, so we will be moving as fast as we can to develop that program and getting out information on those grants and potentially combination loan grant program. So I think that concludes my presentation, and I'll wait for questions later.
Okay. Thank you so very much, Mary. We're going to go ahead and move on to our next speaker, who will be Cheryl Rayburg, who is the Executive Director of North Florida Workforce Development Board. Cheryl is going to share with you some information on mobile career services being provided throughout rural North Florida. Cheryl has worked in rural North Florida for 2.5 years, leading the workforce services of 6 counties that reach from the southern border of Georgia to the Gulf Coast, between the state capital of Tallahassee and Jacksonville on the East Coast. During that time, the board has transitioned from 3 bricks-and-mortar one-stop career centers to 1 regional one-stop, which is geographically located in the center of the 6-county area. As a part of a tiered service delivery plan, mobile services were implemented in the summer of 2007 with the first vehicle. A year later, a second unit was developed to enhance services to welfare transition customers. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Cheryl.
Thank you, and good afternoon, and greetings from beautiful North Florida. I appreciate the invitation to talk with you a little bit today about how we came from actually originally 6 one-stop career centers in our region to 1 regional bricks-and-mortar office and 2 mobile centers on the road. The trip has been eventful and the changes have been challenging, but we feel like we are effective in delivering those services to our region. I've been with the board for about 2.5 years, and part of the changes happened before me. Next slide. Thank you. Some of the things we've had to consider is how the board would come to that decision. We had to consider all of the program needs. We were faced with the need for a second vehicle. We had to do a lot of work on staffing and scheduling, and we did consider greatly the public relations need for this service. So those are the things I'm going to be talking about. Next slide. As you can see from this map, we have 6 counties. That star represents the location of our one-stop center. We're located about 60 miles west of Tallahassee, which is the state capital, and 125 miles east of Jacksonville over on the East Coast. Our area is not densely populated. I believe at last census there was about 117,000 people in our entire region. That population has increased since then, and we're anxiously awaiting a new census count. They are spread out over miles and miles. It's about a 30-mile drive between towns from one county to another, so you can imagine the transportation challenges our customers face. And 3 of our counties are rather small. The other 3 are just small. Our December, just to give you a little context, our December unemployment rate was regionally is 7.7. One of our counties has a 10.9% rate, and another one has a 9.1% rate. So it's quite high in this rural area. The average annual wage in 2007 in our region was $29,830. Since July of last year, we've had about a little over 14,000 visits to our one-stop centers. We've had 678 TANF applicants referred from our Department of Children and Families and who have come to orientation to the Welfare Transition Program, and we've opened 267 new cases in that period of time. We have 3 full-time Welfare Transition career consultants and a current caseload of about 252. So prior to 2004 or 2005, we had offices in all 6 counties, and you can imagine the expenses, the leases, the utilities, the technology infrastructure, staffing, and all of those things. And when funding allocations started getting low, the board closed three of those smaller county offices and retained the one-stop centers in the three larger counties. Then by 2007, it was no longer financially feasible to keep three full offices open. So after about 4 months of discussion and study and board meetings and committee meetings, we came to a decision to implement a tiered service strategy. And briefly, that service strategy is our first level is the traditional one-stop face-to-face services where our customers come into that regional center. We work with them in the normal fashion. And then we had had already implemented a self-service level where we have kiosk operations in three libraries in our region. And our third level is the mobile services where we're taking that office on wheels out to where our customers are. And our fourth level is global services where we use the web-based marketplace where job seekers and employers meet. So that's our tiered service strategy. That decision by our board was quite painful. We did have some opposition to the idea, particularly because in some of these rural communities, a lot of the public services had already left those communities, so people were already having to travel quite long distances for public services like applying for public assistance and food stamps and those kinds of things. In a lot of cases, we were their only connection. And this new way of doing business took a lot of adjustment for our board members, for our staff, and for the general public. But now we have been embraced by all of those communities, and they're very happy to see us come with those services that they thought were gone forever. I can't stress enough the importance of partnerships in developing this mobile service plan. There's no way that this would ever work without the cooperation and coordination with other people in the community. And part of that resistance in the beginning was due to the cost of the vehicle itself. It was hard for people to understand at first glance how we could afford these mobile units when we couldn't afford the office to keep the offices open. But people began to understand that when you have non-recurring funds, if you don't use them, you don't get to use them. So what we did with the original purchase of our unit was put together some regular funding allocations with some non-recurring funds, and we actually spent a little over $300,000 on that first unit, and that excluded a few things like the graphics, which we had done locally, and which saved us quite a bit of money. Once the decision was made to go mobile, we secured the use of the state agency's mobile lab to help us out a couple of days a week, so we didn't have too much of a break in service to those remote communities or those outlying counties. But it didn't take us but 1 week to see that 2 days a week in those counties was not nearly enough to provide an acceptable level of service. So we've progressed from 2 days a week with the state agency's lab to 4 days a week with two vehicles on the road in a pretty short period of time. Next slide, please. Thank you. So since we have only one career center in the region and many of our customers don't have transportation, as I'm sure many of you are familiar with, we had to go mobile to make the welfare transition program work for us. This office on wheels is equipped for pretty much every service that our bricks and mortar office is equipped for. But instead of connecting the customer to us, we're connecting the service to the customer out there where they live. Overcoming that transportation barrier is just such a big issue in our rural communities. But our mobility has helped us to increase that welfare transition participation rate, and I do believe I'm going to owe that unit lunch pretty soon because I think it's going to pass 50% participation rate in the very near future. I feel very proud of our staff for that. Part of our board's mission is self-sufficiency and enhancing economic development in our region, and we believe this mobile service to our welfare transition population and to all of our job seekers and customers is very critical to that mission. Just in this year alone, as I'm sure a lot of you have seen, we've seen a 40% increase in all of the foot traffic in our one-stop services, and a 33% increase in welfare transition participants in the program. Now, our library system is a lead partner in our service strategy at two levels, that of the kiosk operations, which is the self-service. Our kiosk units are placed in those libraries in those small counties, but then they also provide internet service, a computer labs for people to use in those communities. And they have seen a dramatic increase in the number of people coming in looking for jobs and using their computers. But the systems we're able to connect these people to with our mobile services is still often the only access they have. We've seen good response from our welfare transition customers as we've made their career consultants available to them in their own communities. So making these labs available to those welfare transition customers provides access to work activities for them to fulfill their work requirements in the way of job searching, working on their resumes, doing work readiness activities online, and such as that. We also have very good working relationships with our Department of Children and Families as they refer their welfare transition customers to us. We keep those lines of communication open. So we feel like that's one of our strengths in this rural community in serving those welfare transition customers. And we do outstation a staff member at one of their offices 2 and 3 days a week. So we're really not swinging at this ball from just one angle. We've had one customer that lives in the smallest town in our region who, because we made this available to her in her community, since she didn't have transportation, she was able to, with the assistance of her career consultant, she located a job. She's now employed and moving very quickly to self-sufficiency. And then another one recently worked with her career consultant in her community without coming to our regional office, and he helped her to arrange an interview with an employer who met her at the mobile lab, and she was subsequently hired by that employer. We also stationed some of our WIA career consultants on these units. Our veteran service career consultant will go to these units, and they'll help people on the unit, and I'll explain to you the difference in the two units here in just a minute. But they do these things for not only to assist the mobile services staff, but to recruit customers to their program. So next slide. Thanks. So after having our first unit on the road for a year, and based on those foot traffic reports and all the program needs, the board determined that a separate unit was a viable option. In the two larger counties, our first unit, which is a 38-foot unit with 13 workstations, would consistently see over 100 people a day, sometimes as many as 120 or 30 people. And when it would go to the smaller communities, it would see between 10 and 20. So we were trying to serve all of those universal job seeker customers and the welfare transition program customers in one unit, and it was quickly getting stretched beyond capacity for staff and space. So by adding this separate unit using welfare transition program funds, we were able to dedicate the smaller unit, which has 5 workstations, to the welfare transition program. Then we could expand the schedule of the larger unit to twice a week in the more populated counties, and the demand for services just increased as the unemployment rate continued to rise for all of these services, both welfare transition and the universal job seekers and those applying for unemployment compensation. We can still mobilize our welfare transition staff to the larger unit, and we do that, but we always have welfare transition staff on the smaller unit. So that actually relieved some of the congestion on the original larger unit that we have on the road. And this second unit allowed us to concentrate more on welfare transition services and to be in those smaller counties more days. Those were the places where people had more transportation issues anyway. And increasing the number of units we have on the road, the number of offices, naturally increased our foot traffic. The initial cost of the second unit was a little over $200,000, and that did not include the graphics. Next slide. In the beginning, talking about our staffing, in the beginning we started with only one mobile services unit staff member. And then we would rotate one-stop staff to assist on the days that the unit was out on the road. We saw very quickly that another person was critically necessary to operations, so we added another mobile unit staff member. And then unemployment rate kept going up, the demand for services kept going up, and we saw the need for an additional mobile unit staff person. So we now have, then when we added the smaller unit to the large one, naturally we needed more people. So we wound up, at this time we have 3 full-time dedicated staff members to mobile services, and getting that smaller unit allowed us to split the mobile services staff of 3 and then add a career consultant full-time to the smaller unit. And what the career consultants do is schedule their appointments with their customers according to the days that they're going to be in those communities. So it takes a scheduling finesse of our career consultants to make sure the connections are made at the right time in the right place. For safety of staff, we do require that there be 2 people on board at all times. The 3 unit staff members all both drive and serve customers. Our administrative assistant stays on top of the scheduling. She has a master plan that she uses, and then she has a plan for who's going to step in at the last minute. She sort of keeps somebody on call in case one of the mobile unit staff members calls in sick on any morning. She makes those adjustments for staff to have vacations and scheduled time off of any kind. We do have a really good team working in our mobile services, and we have cross-trained people to handle just about any job in our one-stop on a moment's notice. We have WIA and youth program staff assist at scheduled times in order to recruit program participants from the customers who visit these mobile labs out in the communities, just like they do in the resource room in our regional one-stop. And as I said, our Veterans Service staff will also do the same. This scheduling does require some travel for staff within the region, and I think it might have been a little bit of adjustment for some of them to begin with because they were used to going to their desk and staying there all day. But staff have really come to enjoy getting out in the community and making connections in the communities where their customers live. Nobody complains about the travel anymore, and it has become something that they look forward to. Our employer services team schedules the use of our mobile labs and some of their downtime for special requests of employers for things like job fairs and hiring events, layoff assistance, and those kinds of things. And then another role of our employer services team is that of marketing our welfare transition program, work experience program. And I put this in just because we were talking about serving those welfare transition customers in these rural areas. But our employer services team is important to that work because they introduce that work experience program as a benefit or service of our board. And then the welfare transition program director follows up with more detailed information and developing a contract so that we have places for our customers to gain the work experience that they need and fulfill their work requirements. And we have seen a good increase in the number of work sites that we have available to our customers. And naturally, that affects our participation rates. Next slide. on scheduling, the most important thing we have found in scheduling is to have a master schedule and be as consistent as you possibly can. When there are emergencies, you just have to make adjustments. But, for instance, we will have our large unit, it goes to the same place on Monday and Tuesday and the same place on Wednesday and Thursday every week, barring a breakdown. So the people in those communities know when that service is going to be there, and they come to depend on it. And so have our employers. Everybody in the community has come to depend on that. Our smaller unit also has a master schedule. It will be in the same place the second and fourth Monday of every month. Then it will be in the same place the first and third Thursday of every month, and so on. So you get the idea. Consistency is the important thing in scheduling these vehicles and where they go. And again, partner relationships are so important there. When we first started this, the talk about starting mobile services, I began to make calls and visits to partners and to develop those sites for us to set these vehicles up. Our vehicles are not equipped with restrooms, so we have to assure convenient facilities are available for our staff. And then the other issue as far as location is having a place where our staff can go and get lunch when they take a lunch break. We do have microwaves and refrigerators, of course, and so some of them will take their lunches, but having a place for them to get a break from their work is important. We do ask them to, on the large unit where we have three staff members on board at all times, we do ask them to rotate their lunch breaks so that two people are there while one takes a lunch break. And the smaller unit, we allow them to close the door for a brief time in the during the lunch hour so that they can get lunch. So what do we do if one of them breaks down? What we do, as we did just recently, a couple of weeks ago, one of our units broke down on the way to its location in the morning. So we prioritize the service area, and we try to get to divert the other unit. Now that we have a second one, we're able to divert it to where the most people are, where the most customers are going to be waiting for our service. We call customers who have appointments scheduled for that day, and we call the location host, because one of the places, for instance, we use is a Kmart parking lot. And so if our vehicle is not there when it's scheduled to be, customers will go into the store and say, where's the bus? And so it's important that we keep that communication open with our location hosts. And then for an extended repair time, like happened to us recently, we did call on the state agency, and they sent their mobile lab down to help us out so we didn't have too much of a break in services. We do purposely reserve some downtime because of the maintenance needs for cleaning and restocking supplies and forms and updating computer applications and those kinds of things. These are also the days that our mobile services staff can use in the office to catch up on paperwork and attend staff meetings and trainings. And we try to schedule employer special requests for those so-called down days of our mobile units. Next slide. As we launched this idea and began to see it as a real possibility, we contacted our peers and other regional workforce boards whom we knew had mobile units, and they gladly shared their operations plans with us, and we pretty much duplicated plans that other people shared with us and just adapted them to the needs of our region. There were lots of forms to develop for keeping records of mileage, generator time, maintenance, computer applications updates, and all of those things. But we do continue to learn that there's always something that can be improved. It's also really important in developing an operations plan and keeping it updated is that all staff need to be trained in the use of the unit by the company that you purchase from. Our vendor provided a video of the on-site training that he did, and we use that in ongoing training of new staff and as reminder training sometimes. And we think it's very important for the mobile unit staff to read the operations manuals that come with everything on the vehicle. IT staff just has to be involved in the project from start to finish and then ongoing. We've had occasions when our IT director had to troubleshoot satellite connections and things like that. We do live and work in remote areas, but we've really had very little issue with making the connection via satellite. As long as we're able to park in an open space, it hasn't been a big problem for us. He keeps our computers maintained and updated. He installed all of the systems on the computers that we access in our regional one-stop center. And one thing we have been able to do is add laptops to expand the number of computers available to customers and staff. And in some places, we use air cards just to have another connection. With 13 computers going at one time, the bandwidth with the satellite service can get taxed and slow things down. We use cell phones for communication. We have networked printers on the mobile labs, but we have not yet provided fax services. For applications, most of our fax services needed for applications to go to employers when people have applied for jobs. But we have our mobile services staff will bring anything that needs to be faxed. They bring it to the regional office at the end of the day, and it is faxed that afternoon or first thing the next morning. And fortunately, most of our employers are moving to web-based applications, so and that reduces the need for faxing things back and forth. Again, partnerships are very critical to development and implementation of a mobile operations plan. We are very fortunate to have good relationships with our county and city governments in our region. And right here where our offices are located, the Madison County Board of County Commissioners graciously allows us at no charge to secure our vehicle behind their locked gate at their public works yard on weekends. We've had no incidents of any pranks or tampering with our mobile units while they're parked. Slide number 9. We had to do very little advertising for our mobile labs, and that's because with the graphics we have on them, they're a rolling advertisement. They're very difficult to miss. If one passes you on the road, you see it. And actually, we're very much more visible in those small communities now than we were before we put these mobile labs on the road. Many times our small offices in those communities were tucked into another building where they just were not visible. But we do have that visibility now with these vehicles. We also have made use of our regional newspapers. We have used a local radio station public service announcement at times. And we have done printing of materials to hand out to businesses and customers. We've tried to keep our schedule simple so that it doesn't confuse people in the information that we put out. Just a word about our graphics. We do have a local vendor who applied our graphics, so we were able to design them ourselves right here at home. And if there's any problem with them, we have somebody right here who can address those problems. It also saved us a significant amount of money on the purchase originally. As I said, our brochures have been developed that can be used for promotion. We do include this information because it is such an important service in any presentations that we make to community groups and organizations. We provide our customers with a small card with a number that they can call and verify the schedule of the mobile units on any given day. We have used our mobile units in local festivals and festivities in communities. We have not done as much of that in the last year as we did in the first year. We did have the chance back in October to participate in the first mobile services unit here in Florida that was hosted by one of our workforce boards downstate. And that was a very good experience where there were a lot of ideas shared and generated by regional workforce board and service organizations from Florida and across the country. One last idea that we have floated but have not really acted on yet is that of offering ad space for partners in the region, businesses, colleges, and other organizations as a way to generate revenue with our mobile unit. There are some regional workforce boards who do that with their mobile vehicles, And there's just various levels of advertising that we could provide for them at various varying costs. So, but that's an idea that we have not acted on yet. So last slide. So here's my contact information. I would be more than happy to talk with anybody who has questions about how we work these mobile services and how it's working for us in our welfare transition program. But again, thank you for allowing me to talk with you this afternoon, and I'll join Mary at question time and save some time for that. Thank you, Mr. Butler.
Sure. Thank you very much, Cheryl. We're going to go ahead and move on to our next speaker, who will be Mr. Stan Bodka, who is the Director of Sales at T-Train. Stan will talk to you about T-Train, which is a comprehensive, easy-to-use system for improving basic skills measured by the Work Keys employment system. Stan manages the implementation and sales of T-Train nationwide. He recently coordinated the statewide rollout of T-Train in Alabama. Before joining T-Train, Stan sold enterprise resource planning software to manufacturing and distribution companies. Earlier in his career, he worked for IBM in their mid-range systems department. Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome Stan.
Hey, well, thank you. Thanks, I appreciate that. And what I'm going to do here is, see if I can't, just gain control of this. And once again, yes, my name is Stan Brodka from T-Train. And just real quickly, my number here, our number here is 877-842-6205. So I'll be hanging around as well, but if you have any questions in the future, certainly feel free to give me a call. And let's see, I think I took control here, so I apologize. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Sorry about that. If you can advance the next slide, I thought I had control. Thank you. Okay, so just a couple things. Just want to give you just a very quick background. What we've done is that we've got online curriculum, and there are a couple different ways you can implement this, and I'll go into that as well. But I just want to give you the quick overview of what we're all about and how we came about. There's a couple things, one of which is that employers are basically, we know that employers need skilled labor, or skilled people, and what this really comes down to is there's ACT, and ACT is a nonprofit organization. They put out something called the Work Keys Test. And the Work Keys Test is a really neat test in the sense that Work Keys went out into the community, went out to the workforce, analyzed specific jobs, and determined what type of skills are necessary and at what level you need to be at those skills to perform those jobs. So, and what this does is this really creates a common language between employers and potential employees. They can see exactly what type of skills are necessary. And these are foundational skills. So these are the skills, for example, if you're an electrician or you're going to work on auto body or dental assistant, medical assistant, whatever that is, you need to have some foundational skills in order to be successful at that job. And what we're seeing, too, is that students sometimes know a bit of math, but they don't know really how to apply it, for example. So they'll know maybe some adding, subtracting, or maybe they're if they're not even at that level, we can certainly help with that too. But a lot of students will have some basic skills, but it's applying that into a real-world situation and having the critical thinking skills, and that's what we really focus in on. Next slide, please. Okay, these are the areas. There's reading for information, applied math, locating information. I've got those three next to, there's an asterisk next to those three because those are really the core of the program. So these are all the areas that are assessed by this Work Keys test, and these are, in essence, all of the areas in which we supply curriculum for. And we've been very successful helping people obtain those foundational skills. So there are some additional areas such as applied technology, some softer skills such as teamwork, observation, listening, writing, and business writing, all very important as well. But what we found is that certainly you've got to have those, that the reading for information, applied math, and locating information. You're going to need that for just about all the jobs that are out there. And next slide. Okay, this is just an example of what a national career readiness certificate looks like. And here again, this is based on that work keys assessment, based on the applied math, locating information, and reading for information. So when you use this, when you use T-Train, the students can get a certificate showing their competency, showing their ability level in these areas. Next slide. This will just give you an idea of the activity with the National Career Readiness Certificate and the Career Readiness Certificate. Basically, it's the same thing, so don't worry about that. In essence, the difference is, I guess you shouldn't say it's exactly the same thing, but the difference is one is signed by the governor and one is issued directly from the from ACT. So in essence, they measure the same skills, but the thing that I just wanted to highlight here just a bit is that we're working in Alaska, in Alabama, and we're doing a lot of things with distance learning there. In addition, as Cheryl had mentioned earlier about the mobile lab, in PD in South Carolina, they've got mobile labs in which they'll administer T-Train as well. In Oregon, for example, we're working with getting paraprofessionals trained, and we've got a very nice passing rate on that paraprofessional program, which is at basically the teacher's assistant program, and some of the students or some of the individuals are using dial-up there. So we've done some things. We're very familiar with that rural environment as delivering curriculum and helping people obtain the basic skills so they can go on and achieve employment. Next slide. Okay, just a couple things in reference to this and why we feel that this is a good fit or why we've seen success with distance learning. There's a couple behind-the-scenes things, too, as far as a technology standpoint, where we've significantly reduced the bandwidth of the software itself. So this is web-delivered. So there's really two ways, or a number of different ways you can actually implement this or roll this out. One of which is that, you know, in that PD, well, as I mentioned, the PD South Carolina and some other areas, too, they're using a T-Train mobile lab. And that's kind of going back to Cheryl's point again there, where you could administer this actually through that mobile van or that mobile bus. In addition to that, it is internet-based. So because, as a result of it being internet-based, anywhere that somebody has internet access, they can access the program. And it's designed so that you, as an instructor or administrator of the program, you really got some flexibility in the sense of the amount of oversight that you wanted to really engage with that with your clients. So if you want to get them set up onto the system, you can go ahead and do so, and then they get onto T-Train itself, and then you can run some reports, and then you can determine and just monitor their progress as they go along. So from a distance learning perspective, you could either have a follow-up meeting, and maybe an in-person follow-up meeting as an instructor or administrator, maybe even just a quick conference call with that individual, of course, fine by email. I mean, theoretically, you could just let that individual just get onto T-Train and go. Certainly, the more interaction, and I know that you probably know that better than I do, but the more interaction that you can give with that follow-up, the better. So we do have those reports that you can see as an instructor administrator to log on through the internet to see how well they're doing on their progress in the system as well. The instructional design itself, there's just a real human voice that speaks to the person as they go through this. So if you can't be there in person as an instructor, you know, one of the goals certainly with the distance learning, if someone can speak to that individual as they go through that, we have found that to be really helpful. It really is easy to use. It's set up like a website because it's a web-based system, and there's an easy navigation. And just real quickly, we are here to support your efforts. So if you have a call, you know, if you have a question, or even if your clients have a question too, we take calls from everybody. So you know, if they have any type of problems, you can call us, and we've got somebody that's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And the number's toll-free. And during the day, if you call, which I like working, one of the aspects I like about the company, too, is that you get a live person, that you don't have to worry about fighting voicemail. And I'm going to see real quickly if I can't just pull this up real quick, take a little bit change of pace here. Okay. All right. So a couple things. One of which is that this is, as mentioned, this is a web-based curriculum, And there's really two perspectives to this, one of which is what you will see as an administrator or an instructor of the system. And there again, you can run some reports so you can monitor your client's progress as they're moving through this. So then you can also, we've seen when people incorporate this in the distance learning perspective, once again, as that mobile lab unit, or you could follow up with a conference call, email, and check in and give that, do whatever type of, you know, if you want to push people along through the system as well, to give them that motivation to continue, or you can get them just to, you know, you can get them in it and you can really just let them get going. So I'm just going to log in real quick as a student. I'm going to log in as a student, Tom Jones. And this is set up like a website. And I think it's going to take a little bit longer because I'm using this over this over our service here, the live meeting service. And if this doesn't work, I've got a backup plan, so I can go back to the PowerPoint. But I'm hoping that I can show you this as well. Okay. We may be really testing the limits of the bandwidth of the live meeting. And in essence, what I've done, or what a lot of our customers will do here, is that they'll put their clients on the keytrain, and what you can do is that you can give a pretest. So there are many different levels throughout the curriculum, and then based on how well they do on that pretest, you automatically plug them into a level that's appropriate to them, for them. So you don't have to really guess and see at to what level you're going to plug somebody into the curriculum itself. And this, let's see here. Okay. Well, good. I don't know why I was pausing there, but I'm going to jump in now to my assignments. And what I've done here is I've assigned just these three core areas, reading for information, applied math, locating information. Locating information is a really good one because this is understanding gauges, graphs, meters. This is the type of stuff that you do when you're on a job, but it's not often taught in high school. And I'm going to jump into applied math here. Okay, and let me log out here. Because of the live meeting that we're using the service here, I'm not able to, and I apologize, I'm not able to run this. Which is unfortunate, but let's try one more thing here. Okay, well, sorry about that. Let me log out of this real quickly. What I'll do, and, okay, well, what I was hoping to show you is that you've got a pretest that you can give the students. I'm going to jump back to the PowerPoint. Okay, and sorry about that. I think that was just a limitation of the live meeting there that wasn't able of me to show that over the system. If I could go to the next slide. Okay, a couple quick things. So one of which is that, you know, you can give that pretest to that student, and when they take that pretest, that based on that, they're plugged into curriculum that corresponds to their level. I don't know if you can see this slide so quickly, but you as an administrator, you've got the option on what curriculum you wanted to give to the student. So, there are a lot of job profiles that have been profiled within the system, and it's a little bit hard to see this screenshot, but hopefully you can tell that I'm tapping into the job profile database that's supplied by ACT. And next slide, please. And then what I can do is I can assign curriculum based on that. This will give you a little bit of a feel of the curriculum itself. This is locating information. This is what I was speaking about a little bit earlier. And with this, you know, we've got understanding bar graphs. You know, this, if you're a medical assistant, or, you know, if you're an electrician, if you're going to get involved into landscaping, or a carpenter, you're going to be looking at some type of charts, diagrams, and different plans as well. And next slide. Okay, this is what the navigational screen looks like. It really is pretty easy to use. You can set up different instructor accounts, add students to the system. And next slide. Okay, I'm going to go over just a couple quick results here as well. And the next slide, please. We're in the Chicago Public School System. We truly like this because it gives us a lot of credibility because of the number of students that are enrolled. And we've seen some, within 5 or 6 hours on the system, we've seen people move up one level within the WorkKeys system itself. Next slide. And then in the Tidewater Community College, they've got a great program there where they're using Keytrain to help with help students obtain a GED, and seeing some first attempt success rates on the GED now at about 89% to 94%. And that's after, the caveat there is, that's after the students can go up through Keytrain in Applied Math Level 5 and then Reading for Information Level 5. And if the students can get through that and then complete those levels successfully, we've seen the first attempt passing rates on the GED in the neighborhood of that 89% to 94%. Previously at the Tidewater Community College, it was at the low 20% range. So we're real proud of that. And next slide. New Mexico Community College, just wanted to stress that we've seen some improvements in ACCUPLACER scores. So we've seen improvements in GED, ACCUPLACER scores, as well as the WorkKeys assessment. And the next slide. Okay, a lot of improvement in the Georgia High School graduation test. Here again, just wanted to show some of the credibility of the strength of the program itself, in which the passing rates of some of the at-risk population. And just the next slide, please. The next one. Okay, this is really kind of the strength of the system, too. And once again, I apologize for not being able to show this to you with the Flash player not working with the live meeting. But what you can do is this, and let me just try this real quick again. And let's see if I can't log in. Okay. So this, now I'm able to log in, and I don't think I'm going to be able to actually run a lesson, but this is what you see as an administrator or instructor of the system. And what I'm going to do here is I'm going to add a student real quickly, because this is what you would do, with your potential clients. And if I add this student, let's say I add maybe Tony Jones here. And I'm just going to add a username and password. Okay, assign a lesson. Now, what I can do is I can assign lessons to different lesson areas, Reading for Information, Applied Math. I can just go ahead and assign that lesson, and that'll give that Here again, the nice thing about the pretest is with your clients, especially if they're in remote areas, it's going to be really hard to get a feel for where they're at as far as their educational level. So giving that pretest plugs them into the level that's appropriate for them. And then I can also go and select profile. So what I can do here, for example, is that, and this really ties everything together, this is the way you would go about assigning curriculum, as an example. Now, if I put in medical, I can see here that I've got EMTs, I've got medical clinical laboratory technologists, medical assistants, medical repairers. So if I click on medical assistants, and these are job profiles that have been done by the ACT job profilers, and I get an ONET code here. In addition, I get a description, and then I also get some of the tasks that are involved. So what this does is a couple things. One of which, it should answer those questions, if you're dealing with some clients, why do I need to have these foundational skills? Well, you need to have foundational skills because this is the type of stuff that you're going to do on the job, and this has been determined by, what's called an ACT job profiler, and they've actually gone out into the workforce. This is not based on theory. This is based on actually sitting down with and meeting with medical assistants in this case, and determine what type of math skills and at what level do they need to be. You can see here they need to be at a level 4 or higher to do this job. Locating information, they need to be at a level 5 or higher, which really makes sense because as a medical assistant, you're going to take a look at charts and gauges and graphs and looking at different meters and being able to interpret those properly. And then the final step with this, which I think is really neat, is that you can tie all this together. So we've got the different skill areas. We know which level you need to be, where you need to how high of that level or how high in that skill you need to be. And then what you can do, the final step, is assign curriculum based on that job profile. So here again, I'm going to give that pretest to that student, and I'm going to check here to add one level to those shown additional practice. Click assign, and click OK. And now what I've done there, once again, is that from that instructor or administrator perspective, I've now assigned curriculum based on a specific job profile. Okay. And let me pull this up as well. Okay. I'll go back to this here, main screen. And then as administrator or instructor of the system, let me share this. Okay, actually if you go to the next slide. Okay, this is just highlighting just a different job profile. I just put an electrician there, and we can see the different types of electricians. And in the next slide, please. Here again, we can see that ONET code and see that the skill levels that are needed to perform that job, also the skill areas. And once again, we can assign curriculum based on a specific job profile. Next slide. And this is what I wanted to show you, and once again, I apologize for this not being compatible with a live meeting, but we really have had a lot of success in the delivery of this over the internet and in some of those vans as well. And this is what the curriculum actually looks like. And it's a little bit better if I could do this live, but here's at least a couple screenshots. What we've got is applied math. Now, in applied math, we've got these different topic areas, and if you can go to the next slide. And what I've done here, this is what the curriculum looks like itself. Now, this is a neat thing about this in the sense that we've got applied math, and now I'm in handling money. So this is level 3. And there's the different levels. In ACT, the work keys system is based on these different levels. In math, it goes through 1 through 7. So this will give you a little bit of a feel for what level 3 is. And here again, this corresponds, what this knowledge now corresponds back to those job profiles that I just showed. So this is, you know, the type of skills that you would need to be at a level 3. For an electrician, for example, I think you need to be, or a medical assistant, for example, you need to be at a level 4. So here again, we're making this all relevant, these foundational skills and tying them back to specific jobs. What I like about this curriculum is this, is that here we've got a word problem, and rather than just saying, you know, here's a word problem, figure it out on your own, what we're going to do here is we're going to take this just on a step-by-step basis. So the exercise in this situation is to, you know, use the mouse and just click on what you need to find. So the goal here, you know, certainly with distance learning, if you can't be with that person, then the next best thing is if we can have that real voice that speaks to them and really breaking things down on a very small step-by-step basis. Next slide, please. And what I've done there, you'll see that feedback there, and it'll say, sorry, that's not correct. Look for the words that tell you what you need to find. So here again, if somebody, you know, if you can't be with them in a classroom situation, if you can be, that's great. But if you can't be, what we're going to do here is that I got this problem incorrect. I clicked on the wrong area. And what I got was that feedback right away. So it's going to guide me and give me some hints. You know, rather than during these practice problems, rather than just saying, hey, you got this wrong, what we're going to do is we're going to give some feedback and some guidance. And we found that to be really helpful in a distance learning environment as well. And red there, that popped up right below the exercise, you know, sorry, this is not correct. Look for the words that tell you what you need to find. And next slide, please. Now, when I get that correct, it changes and highlights, you know, what I'm looking for. I need to find how much you spent on office supplies. And what we find is here, too, is that this is a word problem. Now, it's not, it's a relatively simple word problem, but people seem to get really intimidated with the word problems. So here again, we're going to just break it down step by step, just on an incremental basis, and show. We want to show people so they can obtain those critical thinking and skills. And you apply the same type of logic to other problems too. You know, first, what are you looking for? You know, listing out the facts and going through these things just on an incremental basis. Next slide. Okay. So now the next step here is, you know, I know what I'm looking for. How much money did you spend? You know, let's translate that into an actual math operation. So here again, we're just going to take things just on a step-by-step basis, in guiding that student on how to tackle word problems. And what I'm looking for, when I'm thinking about how much, I'm really thinking about, you know, addition. And the next slide. Okay, and then the next step with that is, you know, when I'm looking at addition, when I'm solving these problems, I know what I'm looking for. I'm going to, the operation, I know what operation, that's addition, and now I'm going to click on the facts, and now I'm ready to solve the problem. So what we're doing, once again, is just wanted to give you a little feel for the delivery method of how we're just going through this on an incremental basis. Okay, the next slide. Okay, and this is just a course analysis report. This is what you would use, you know, as an administrator or an instructor of the system. And here again, this will enable you to track how everybody's doing. As a screenshot, it's not as clear as I'd like it to be, but on the left-hand column there, those are names. The top name there is Matt Coles. The next name is Greg Barton. The columns there are, you know, the pretest level 1, level 2, level 3. We can see there's some data in the column level 3 and the column level 4. So we can see how well the students are doing, your clients are doing as they progress through this. So you can keep tabs on them and you can see, okay, how are they doing on these different level quizzes. In addition to that, the far right-hand column, it's a lot more clear when you look at it on the PDF form as opposed to the screenshot. But you can see, for example, that Greg Barton has been in applied math. He's been in there for 13 hours, 13 minutes, and 38 seconds. So you can see, okay, this person, you know, they need to either put more time into this, or if they're telling you they put time into it, you can actually see how long they've been in there. They get logged out after 15 minutes, so you can't log in and maybe go to, you know, go out to eat or whatever and just have that accumulated time. I just wanted to show that from that instructor-administrator point of view, you can really keep tabs and monitor the progress of people, even if they're just, you know, if they are remote as well in a distance learning environment. And the next slide. Okay. I think that might be it, actually. Okay. Once again, my name is Stan Brodka from Keytrain, and I apologize not being able to show the curriculum. I put the screenshots in there just as, and I'm glad I did, just as a backup so I could show you that a bit of that and just show you a little bit, you know, how we can work with that distance learning environment from the perspective of the instructor and the administrator, monitoring how that individual is doing. And then just as a brief review, showing how you can assign curriculum. You can just always just assign lesson areas, but to make it more relevant for that individual or for your clients, if they have an interest in becoming a medical assistant or a particular job area, how you can assign curriculum based on that, and just a little bit of the delivery method there of the curriculum itself, in which we want to take things on an incremental basis, go step by step, and then importantly for a distance learning environment perspective, where I couldn't show that, I couldn't show the sound, or you couldn't hear the sound, but you can turn on the sound so you've got that individual has a real person that speaks to them, they can turn that on or off. And in addition to that, when they get problems wrong, you know, it'd be nice to have somebody there as a tutor giving them some guidance. But we do have that top, you know, that window that demonstrates, hey, you got this wrong, take a look at it like this, and gives that individual some coaching along the way. So that's really what we're all about, and I'll be hanging around for questions as well. And Mr. Butler, I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Stan. Great job. We did have one other speaker planned for you, who was Ms. Teresa Wall McDonald, who's from the Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribal TANF program, who unfortunately was not able to join us today. So we're hoping that we might be able to bring her on in one of our upcoming webinars. So with that being said, we can go ahead and open up the lines for comments or questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. If you're using a speakerphone, please lift up your handset before entering your request. Once again, to register for a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4. One moment, please. And we have no questions from the phone lines.
Hey, actually, we have three questions that came through on email. The first was for Cheryl. What was the source of funding for the initial $300,000 mobile unit?
That was a combination of Workforce Investment Act allocations, program allocations, and some other non-recurring grant funding. It was just a combination of funds, different pots of money that we pieced together.
Great, thank you. Hi. We also got another question in from the web. There is a county who's secured a construction permit for a public FM educational radio station. And the question is for Mary initially. Something like that would qualify for sort of funding under the Community Connect Rural TV Grant or Telecommunications Program. And if not, if she had any suggestions or anyone had any suggestions on funding sources.
Okay, let me understand. It's a request to fund a public TV station, or
say FM radio station.
Oh, FM radio station.
Radio.
Educational.
No, our grant program wouldn't cover that. The only thing I can think of is the Federal Communications Commission might have funding for something like that.
Thanks. And I believe we actually have a third question, and this is actually for Stan. Can the time spent by the client be broken down by date and hours?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yes, you can run a report, and you can actually pick whatever date you'd like, whatever date range that you'd like, and download that into an Excel spreadsheet. So, yes.
And Stan, can you give your contact information one more time? I think some people are looking to possibly contact you for a further, I guess, demonstration.
Yeah, that would be great. I'd be happy to. I can do a webcast demonstration as well. And my number here is 877-842-6205. And my email address is just Stan, S-T-A-N, at keytrain.com. So it's just S-T-A-N at K-E-Y-T-R-A-I-N.com. And I guess we'll give the number again, 877-842-6205. And certainly I'd welcome anybody's phone call.
Thanks. We actually had another question come in, and this is for Stan again. The question was, if Keytrain is used by a client from a remote location, can access to the Internet be limited? So I guess maybe, does it have to be a certain level of Internet sort of connection speed, or is there a way to sort of connect and download maybe modules onto a computer to connect if Internet availability is limited or spotty?
Okay. Yeah, that's a great question. A couple things. We have done some things with from a technical standpoint to minimize the bandwidth that's necessary to run Keytrain. We do have people that are running Keytrain on a dial-up. And the way this works, it's somewhat interesting in the sense where you access this through a browser, like through Internet Explorer. And when you do this, there's a little bit of a download. So as you're going through the curriculum itself, you're on the Internet, but you're not, as you jump through screen to screen, you're not jumping screen to screen on the web. It's actually self-contained. So it's actually downloading a piece of the curriculum onto your computer through the Internet Explorer. So you can click through it pretty quickly. You may have to wait a little bit while if your Internet connection is really slow. You may have to wait a little while for that piece of curriculum to get to you. And then when you're done and when you exit, it actually remembers and then sends all that information back to the server. So I probably did a poor job explaining that from a technical standpoint. But the neat thing about it is when you're surfing the Internet and you click on a link and it waits a little while, and then you click on another link and it waits a little while, that download happens all at once in one condensed version with the software, so you don't have to wait through every screen, which could get a little frustrating. You know, once you have it, you've got it, and you can go through that portion of the curriculum. So the download's in kind of chunks, I guess I should say. That's a non-technical way to say it. But so yes, you can use it in forms of dial-up. It's better if you have a higher speed, but it certainly will work. Okay.
Excellent. Thanks. And are there any other questions maybe on the phone line that have come in?
No, there are no questions from the phone line.
We'll turn this back over to James.
Thank you all very much. Well, thanks to everyone who joined us today. Special thanks to all of our presenters for sharing your experiences with us on rural mobile technology and distance learning. We hope that the information shared today will somehow be beneficial to you as you continue to serve your TANDAP customers and the community. As we've mentioned in the past, a transcript and audio recording of this webinar will be made available for everyone within the upcoming weeks. Also, you can feel free to mail anyone on the Rural Communities Initiative team if you have any further questions, or you can email me. So, on behalf of myself and those of the Rural Communities Initiative team, we thank you very much for joining us and have a pleasant day.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your lines.